Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to another exciting night of NBA basketball.
With the first pick, the Detroit Pistons select Cade Cunningham from Oklahoma State University.
Chandler again. Oh, what a block by Max Seal! My goodness!
The Pistons are digging in. They got the depth. They got the big man. They got the better basketball team. No doubt about it.
There's Jaden playing the passing lane. Skies a jam. Dynamite dunk, and the crowd loves it.
Pistons need a three, and they have just under 3 seconds to do it. Here's Chauncey Phillips. Here it is. He's got it. He's got it. Chauncey Phillips hits the three. Overtime. Amazing.
On a bounce.
Pistons fans, welcome back to another edition of the Palace of Pistons podcast, part of the Believe Network. I'm your host, Mike King Wilano. Joining me this week is the regular cast and crew, my co-host, Aaron Johnson and Jasper Apollonia. Fellas, how are we doing?
Very, very good, Mike. I know you're under the weather a little bit. I'm under the weather a little bit. I feel like I'm sick every other week, but back to talk about a Pistons team that has started yet another losing streak. And it doesn't look very, very promising for them right now. But we've got a lot of good stuff to talk about today. Some really fun topics, some really interesting topics. We start off with a little bit of a scary topic, but definitely a ton to get into. And I wouldn't want to do it without any other two gentlemen by my side.
Yeah, I physically feel fine, but watching the Pistons makes me feel sick on a pretty much semi-nightly basis. But other than that, I am doing well. Boy, we have some fun stuff to talk about. It's funny. I feel like every podcast we go, this is the low point of the Pistons season, and it never is. Things can always get worse. Let this be a lesson to you kids at home. Just when you think you've reached the bottom, a gateway to hell will open up and drag you down. And that's kind of what happened to the Pistons this week, as they lost pretty much the only good thing they've got going for them.
And we're going to talk about that and a couple of other things as well, including some players that the Pistons have been linked to for trade. And then we're going to play a quick game of buy or sell to finish off the podcast. But before we get into all of that, I'd like to thank our sponsor for this week, and that is BetOnline. With the NFL playoffs right around the corner, shoot, they're practically here, and the NBA season in full swing, BetOnline has you covered with all the up-to-the-second odds, news, and scores. With additional odds, lines, trends, and info on desktop and mobile, you can access the world's best wagering information anytime. Head there today, in on the action, and see all the updated odds. And remember to use our promo code BELIEVE, that's B-L-E-A-V, to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit when you use BetOnline. Again, that promo code is BELIEVE, B-L-E-A-V. To receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit when you use BetOnline. BetOnline, where the game starts. The topic that both of you sort of alluded to is our first topic of the day, and that is Cade Cunningham's injury. He's expected to miss what has been quoted by Shams Charania of The Athletic as at least a few games with a knee strain, which has come out to about 7 to 10 days, now about 5 to 8 days. Since that injury happened. I don't know if I missed it or if I wasn't looking in the right area, but I did not see the Pistons press release X account put out an official anything regarding the injury to Cade. Found it a little odd because the Pacers were very quick to respond to Tyrese Halliburton's similar strain in his leg. Odd that we didn't get anything and really still haven't, but maybe that's another topic. So you guys kind of alluded to how brutal it is to lose your best player at a time when the Pistons are already down and out for the most part. Do you have any, I guess, feeling and like what's the short-term outlook? Does this really even matter? Because they obviously weren't winning games with K. They only have 3 wins on the season. Are you taking stock into like, oh, this is an opportunity for Killian Hayes? This is an opportunity for Jaden Ivey to be more of the lead ball handler. Does it just not matter at all? Does it just make you not really want to watch the games even more? Is there anything that we can glean out of, you know, Cade being out for a couple of games here, other than just the Pistons are going to be a little bit more rough to watch?
I think it definitely matters a lot, like from various aspects. First off, like Cade needs to be okay. That's the number one thing. And the 24 hours that we went not knowing what the deal was very scary, just because of how everything that happened with Cade Cunningham last season went down. Everyone was just kind of sitting on their hands waiting to get some official word. And we didn't really get any after the game, the night that it happened in Denver. And people were speculating, oh, did it happen in that loss to Golden State late when he looked like he aggravated his knee? Monty Williams said before the game against the Kings on Tuesday this week that it didn't happen on a specific play during the game. They went back and reviewed the film, and he attributed it just to the load that Cade Cunningham has been playing, you know, the type of impact, the amount of minutes, the type of usage he has, the number of defenders he's seen. That's what they attributed that injury to. But it matters that Cade is, A, it doesn't sound like a long-term thing. I saw him after the game Tuesday against Sacramento, and he seemed to be in good spirits, was walking all right. It doesn't really seem like it's anything super, super serious. Now, does that mean Cade is coming back at the end of that 7 to 10 days period that he was going to be reevaluated with? No, it doesn't. We don't know yet how long he truly will be out, but it does appear that he's avoided anything super, super serious. And that's the most important thing. If Cade had suffered another long-term injury, that would have been a serious, serious problem for the Pistons, just from the standpoint of their franchise guy is out again. And then you have to start to talk about, can he handle the workload? Can he be the franchise guy? Can you really trust building around him if he's hurt again long term? And so it sounds like the Pistons have avoided that, which is massive. What also matters is we're seeing just how bad this roster has been put together around Cade Cunningham. Just as they were last year, they're not built to play without Cade Cunningham this year. And we see it on a game-by-game basis since he's been out, whether it's the starting lineup, whether it's the guys coming in off the bench. It's such an inadequate roster. They prove it at every stretch of the game. And it's just been an absolute disaster. And if I'm sitting here as Troy Weaver, I have to be red in the face knowing that I've seen my team without Cade Cunningham before, and I had a whole offseason to say, okay, I have to fix this so that if Cade does miss some time, my team will be able to play and compete without him. And they virtually are brought back the same roster in the next season, and now Cade is out again, and we're seeing that. So if I'm Troy Weaver, I'm a little red in the face right now because it doesn't look great that I haven't improved this roster in my role to survive a little bit without Cade Cunningham. And three, it matters from the standpoint of, yes, Killian Hayes is getting more minutes in starting. Yes, Marcus Sasser's in the rotation right now. But the big person that had the most to gain, it just in terms of usage, ball handling, opportunity to show what he can do, is Jaden Ivey. And the results have been kind of mixed. Like, he's handling the ball a lot more. He's taking a lot more shots, but the percentages haven't been great in the first 2 games that he's been out, right? Shooting a lot more threes, not efficient from the three-point line. I think he was 2 of 10 last night in their loss to San Antonio. But we are seeing him on the ball more in this scenario. We really haven't seen them go with a fully spaced out lineup with a lineup that I configured in my head was Will they go Ivy? Will they go Sasser? Will they go Boyan, Knox, and Duren? Just to really maximize spacing, keep that one big out there and see what they can do. They've started Killian Hayes both nights with Cade out, and Killian Hayes continues to prove he's not an NBA player despite an expanded opportunity once again. But those are really the three things that have stood out to me, and nothing's really worked out great. The roster isn't prepared to ever play without Cade Cunningham. Not ever, ever, ever. Even against the second worst team in the NBA, they're going to lose by 20, which they did yesterday. The guys that have the opportunity to step up with Cade Cunningham out haven't really lived up to that yet. And the only good thing is that it's not a, doesn't sound like super long-term injury for Cade. That's really all I've been able to take away from it so far.
Yeah, obviously it's a good thing that it seems like this is not a long-term issue, and I'm knocking on wood as I say that. But really what this does is it exposes just how terrible this roster is, exactly like Aaron said. And look, they were still losing games with Cade, but in the previous nine games before he was injured against Denver, the Pistons had only lost two of those games by double digits. And I know that doesn't seem like a great accomplishment, but the fact is they had only kept eight of their previous 23 games before that, all losses, obviously, within single digits. So there was definitely an improvement in the on-court play. And a lot of that also came down to the return of Bojan Bogdanović, but Cade coming along was definitely making the Pistons more competitive, even if they weren't necessarily winning these games. Now you're starting to see what this team really looks like without him. They were competitive in the first quarter against Denver, just absolutely demolished the rest of the way. They had that 47-point first quarter against Sacramento in the next game and were destroyed for the remaining three quarters. They were outscored, I think, 132-53. The rest of that game, just like absolutely embarrassing. And then, of course, you see last night, as we're recording this, yet another embarrassment against the Spurs, one of the dregs of the league, where they were just completely uncompetitive the entirety of that game. They got smoked in the first quarter and just did not have a single response. So without Cade, you're really seeing just how futile it is for this team to even try and win games without him. They're completely lost without him on the floor. And, maybe you say, it's good they're seeing what they can get from Ivy or Killian. But let's be honest. Like, there's no positives to take away from these games other than a good play here and there or a good quarter here and there. They're just completely lost without him on the court. And you're seeing that right now. It only strengthens what we have been saying for weeks now, which is that change is necessary, both on the court and in the front office. And you're really starting to see it boil over with Monty Williams. I don't know if you guys saw that video last night of him walking into the locker room, literally just holding his head in his hands. The guy is completely lost. And it just feels like this team without Cade has absolutely nothing to contribute on the court. They're a disgrace without him. So you're really hoping that this is something you can come back from quickly, because otherwise, I'm just being completely honest, these games are not worth watching without him.
So it's less of a meaning like for individual players, and more of the meaning that we're taking out is that this roster is constructed poorly, even though they put together a good half, like a good 1.5 quarters against the Kings, and then got flattened. Really, the piece to take away is that the roster is just so poorly constructed around him that it doesn't even matter what's necessarily happening on the court right now, because the only things that matter are his health, and that's pretty much it.
I think you're also just seeing how crucial Cade is and how much he's been able to elevate such a horrendous roster. Like, it's a night and day. Like I said, their last nine games, one of them was a win, and the rest were losses, of course. But like I said, only two of those losses were by double digits. And now you're getting absolutely mollywopped by the Spurs. So I think for me, it's yes, one, you're seeing how terrible the roster is, but it's also a little bit of validation and vindication in regards to just how good Cade Cunningham is and just how much he has elevated his play over this last month or so, especially coinciding with the return of Bojan Bogdanović. Like, you can see, I think, even more clearly just how much he's improved over the course of this season and just how, like, he doesn't need that much in order to make them at least competitive. Not winning games, but at least competitive. Like, you don't need to give him that much, and they've given him even less than that. Like, yeah, it's twofold. It's nice to see that Cade is really as impactful as we think he is. It's also incredibly disheartening to see just how inept the rest of this roster is without him.
Yeah, it's a tough watch. There's no doubt about that. Watching the collapse against the Kings, I think, was maybe a breaking point for a lot of people. Clearly, that win against the Raptors did not do anything, which maybe we sort of already kind of figured. It was just going to be they're going to win a game eventually type of deal, and they caught the Raptors at a good time.
At a perfect time. They traded OG Adonubi that morning. Like, that morning they had traded OG, so they were completely right. Caught off guard. Like, if there's anything, it's like a fluke win. That was a fluke win. There's no reason to believe if OG hadn't been traded, in my opinion at least, that they wouldn't still be talking about this as what? Now a 35-game losing streak, something like that?
Yeah, it would be 35. Yep. Yeah, speaking of trades, our next topic is about some players that the Pistons have been linked to, whether that be from The Athletic or from Yahoo. I think today's was from Yahoo. That the Pistons continue to be on the offensive, not offensive watching, but on the offensive of trying to find some actual decent players to put on the roster that accentuate the skill set of Cade and a couple of their other younger players. So the Pistons have been linked to Pascal Siakam, who is widely known to be on the trading block and has been for probably over a year at this point. I think we've been talking about Siakam to Atlanta or some other team for probably 14 months now. And he was listed alongside the Pistons as a team that is interested in acquiring him. And then today from Yahoo, from Jake Fisher, from Yahoo, DeJounte Murray is also being not really like listed as a player that the Pistons have been going after, but I think it's sort of assumed that Detroit has called on him in some capacity, and making such a move, hypothetically would be, a very bold one for the front office to make, to try to put a secondary guard next to Cade that has a repertoire for being a good defender, even though he hasn't been as good of a defender in his time in Atlanta. But regardless, another very good young guard that at least on paper fits alongside Cade Cunningham. So with these bigger fish like Pascal Siakam or DeJounte Murray, do either of you think that the Pistons are going to be getting one of those players at the deadline?
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I don't know how realistic it is that they end up with either of these players. I certainly do not think there's a pathway to Pascal Siakam that makes sense for this team. You're talking about a guy that is unlikely to commit to an extension when he's a free agent at the end of the season. And I don't understand what the point is of trading for that when you've won three games this year. Like, if you're trading for a bigger name, they need to be committed, because it doesn't really matter what they give you this right. year in the grand scheme of things. Like, yes, they'll make you a little bit more palatable on the court, a little more palatable to watch, but like, it's the middle of January and you've won three games. Like, it does not matter that they're under contract this year. It matters that they're under contract 1, 2, 3 years down the line. And unless you have Pascal Siakam signing an extension when he gets here, trading for him and trading assets to get him just makes absolutely zero sense. I mean, I would imagine everyone's pretty much in agreement there, correct?
Yeah, I mean, if he's not going to sign an extension with Sacramento, and it seems like that was kind of implied that he really wants to test unrestricted free agency, and he's not going to sign an extension unless he gets traded to a team that, you know, he would want to be with long term, like perhaps a Golden State, there is 0% effort that should be put into getting Pascal Siakam by this front office. Zero.
Yeah, I have no interest in Siakam. I think he's a total non-starter for me. There's zero indication that he would re-sign here. There's zero indication that you would have enough to give up to make it worth Masai Ujiri's time. And you look at next year in terms of free agency, yes, the Pistons are number two in terms of projected cap space, only behind the 76ers. But like, that says it all right there, doesn't it? If I'm Pascal Siakam, why would I not just sign with another team like the 76ers or the Utah Magic or the Orlando Magic or even the Indiana Pacers? Like, if I can get a max, if I'm Pascal Siakam, I'm looking at the money that you can offer me. What's really to stop me from taking, say, you know, $2-4 million less a year to sign with, say, the Indiana Pacers or something like that, a team that actually has a future that you can see right now? Why would I sign with the Pistons? I just don't see any real need for him to do that other than pure avarice if nobody else is willing to offer him that. But I look at the teams around the league that do have cap space, and I think they all would be better situations for him. So for me, Siakam's a total non-starter. I don't see how that could work for Detroit. Murray is signed long-term, so perhaps, but even then, it's one of those things where I just have a hard time seeing you being able to offer Atlanta something that would really make it worth their while, unless they're willing to do something like, I don't know, like maybe you swap Ivy and Asar Thompson for DeJounte Murray and this is gonna sound funny, but like Sadiq Bey,
bring him home, there you go.
or like maybe DeAndre Hunter is a little more realistic, but like even then, like we're talking about salary matching, like I don't think you do pay Sadiq. That's the whole reason you traded him. And that would be an right. awkward reunion.
They're not getting Sadiq Bey back, guys.
Yeah, it's not happening. No. Like
and the Hawks are also not signing him.
It'd have to be DeAndre Hunter. I mean, I'd put
DeAndre Hunter
in trades right now with Atlanta.
And exactly.
Something I put together was Hunter and Murray from Atlanta, and you're sending out Bogdanovich, Ivy, Marvin Bagley, and then, you know, what type of pick capital is required. I mean, I don't think DeAndre Hunter is necessarily a super, super valuable asset right now. And I don't know how favorable DeJounte Murray is viewed, but, you know, I'm not thinking Atlanta wants to tear everything down. I think that they very much like Trae Young still. He's very much still their franchise guy. There have been no rumblings that that's going to change anytime soon. Jalen Johnson's had a really, really good season for them. When he's been on the court, he just came back from injury. Like, he's definitely a big part of their future on the wing. Sadiq Bey is starting for them and playing pretty freaking well this year. And then they have Clint Capela. And honestly, the center that I like more for them, especially long-term, is Onyeka Okongwu. So it's like, I think they're looking to find some pieces that can plug and play. And Bogdanovich and Ivy could do that in a sense. I think Bagley gives them another rotational big. But you're also giving them a lot of contracts that if things still aren't working 2 years down the line, and Trey Young is like, okay, we've done this now for 7 years, 8 years. I've gotta move on. We haven't built a winner here. Like, you have these guys also coming off the books to the point where they're gonna have a clear cap sheet to work with. A young guy in Jaden Ivey who knows where he's at in 2 years, and whatever sort of draft capital they get as well. So I like DeJounte Murray as a target for the Pistons. His contract, he has a new contract kicking in next year, but by the time it's done, he's 31 years old. It only gets up to $30 million, and it's, you know, in 4 years. So he's a guy that conceivably is a good fit alongside Cade Cunningham, can score the ball and shoot it almost 40% this year as a 3-point shooter. He's really, really grown in that area. He's not the defender that he once was, not whatsoever, but the way that he's playing, it's easy to see him coming in and helping this team. So I like DeJounte Murray much more as a trade candidate than Pascal Siakam or Kyle Kuzma or any of those other guys, those quote-unquote bigger names that the Pistons seem linked to. And trading for DeAndre Hunter and his $20 million a year contract, it kind of concerns me, but I still think there's some upside to him as well. But he hasn't had a great career yet, and he also tends to get hurt. So I don't love bringing him in, but I could see it being needed if they're going to get Murray as well.
But Aaron, you just hit on the reason why that trade doesn't make sense for Atlanta. Because if they're going to trade for somebody like Bojan Bogdanović, why would you trade DeJounte Murray for Jaden Ivey? Like, if you're trading for right. Jaden Ivey, that right there is saying, hey, we need to rebuild a little bit. And doing that plus Bogdanović doesn't make sense if you're also sending out DeJounte Murray. Like, that's a rebuild move. That's a reloading move, because Ivy's not ready to be the starter in a backcourt in a playoff series, like, straight up. And if you're trading for somebody like Bogdanović, that's you saying, hey, we're trying to get better, we're trying to compete at a higher level. Otherwise, he's just an expiring. And if he's just an expiring, well, in that case, then you're trying to rebuild, which means it needs to be a total fire sale if you're Atlanta. So no, I just think it's a non-starter for Atlanta. Yeah, it makes sense for Detroit, but I don't see how it makes sense from the Hawks' perspective, because it's, in a way, if they're trading for a package like that in return for DeJounte Murray, who is an established player in this league, what you're really saying is you're throwing up your hands and saying we need to rebuild, not that we're trying to compete. And that means you need to do something completely different. So I just don't see how it makes sense for Atlanta to do that.
I'm curious what the value around the league is on Murray, because in theory, like, this Atlanta team should be very good. Like, if Trae Young is a superstar and DeJounte Murray is worth 4 first-round picks, which is what Atlanta gave up to get him, like, if he's that good and you have Jalen Johnson, who's having this great season, and you have 2 good rotational centers, and you have Jalen Johnson, like, why is this team so bad? Like, I've seen a lot of, at least from the few Hawks follows that I follow along with, like, they're not necessarily talking about how great DeJounte Murray's been this season. And, you know, the numbers are fine, but more of the stuff that I see is he doesn't really pass the ball all that much. He's not playing defense. He's not the defender that he used to be. So it's like, I'm curious what the league values him at. Is he worth a ton of draft capital? Is he worth numerous win now pieces? Like, there are the other teams that are interested in him, the Knicks, the Lakers. Like, what are they willing to give up to get him? What does that competing package look like? And is it worth the Pistons either shipping out a bunch of young guys, Thompson and Ivy and Sasser and picks, or is it not as competitive? And has the market for him really dropped because of how much he hasn't worked in Atlanta?
I think there's a double-edged issue also. Look, let's say this first off. This is not a team that's been linked to him, but if I'm like Utah, for example, and I'm trying to offload Lauri Markkanen, that's a more appealing trade package from both perspectives. And if I'm Detroit, trading for DeJounte Murray does not fix what is wrong here. Yes, it adds another player, but if you are shipping out Bojan Bogdanović, then really you're not improving your spacing in a meaningful manner. And as we've seen from these last few games, the rest of this roster is still pitiful. They are not in a position to compete. It doesn't matter if you bring in DeJounte Murray and you pair him with Cade. When you're playing a front court with James Wiseman in it, and I'm sorry, I still am high on Jalen Duren, but this year has been very enlightening in terms of what his, you know, issues are as a player. He's just not there defensively. He can't stay on the court enough, healthy enough. You have so many issues on the wing still. I just don't see how this puts you in a position to where even next year you're looking at playing competitive basketball. Like, where are the wings coming from? Where is this front court depth coming from? And if you trade for DeJounte Murray, that immediately closes up half of that cap space for you that you have available this offseason. So who else are you bringing in? I just think this roster is so devoid of talent from top to bottom that making this one trade doesn't really help you. And look, I know people are really clamoring for a move, but I think the reason why you're not seeing those moves happen is largely because teams around the league are saying, look, we're A, not all that interested in what you have to offer us, and B, the Pistons saying, in order for us to get these players that we want, we're going to have to trade away basically all the pieces that aren't Cade and one of the other young guys in order to acquire that asset, and then look at the rest of the roster. So there's a multitude of reasons why a move hasn't come. I just don't think that trading for one of these guys is the answer right now. You need to trade for somebody under contract that is more of a role player. And that is how you need to start building up this roster. It can't happen with a big move. At least that's the way that I see it for now.
I just don't see a big move, like you said, solving the issue. Because the reality is let's just say that they are hell-bent on getting DeJounte Murray. Another team can make a better offer. One of the teams that's been linked to him has been the Lakers. The Lakers are reportedly just not really willing to move Austin Reeves in a deal for Murray. And they probably have to put in D'Angelo Russell's salary or Rui Hachimura or, you know, something. They're not really willing to do that. But if all of a sudden the Pistons come out with their offer of Ivy or Bogdanovich and stuff, other teams can probably do better. Because like you said, Ivy's not ready to be the starting two guard in a playoff series. He's going to have a ton of suitors for Murray. The Bulls were supposedly in on Murray. I don't know if a LaVine-Murray swap was discussed just to make salaries match or whatever. But the reality is the Pistons don't have that great of offers for big fish. And when you're competing with playoff teams, teams with championship aspirations like the Golden State Warriors, who are in desperation mode and maybe would give up a Jonathan Kuminga and or a Moses Moody plus Andrew Wiggins to do whatever they need to do to prop the window open for Steph Curry to maybe get one last championship in the Bay Area, it's going to be very difficult for Detroit to even compete with that. So it seems like it's going to be more moves around the margins. It's going to be, you know, moving on from Alec Burks and getting an asset back. It's going to be maybe you do end up getting a first-round pick for Bogdanovich, who is playing better as of late and appears to be healthy.
How does that happen, though? How do you have 4 years to build out your team and collect assets as you rebuild? And in year four, you don't have the necessary assets to make a splash, to make a move. Like, that is inconceivable to me. It is 4 years. So many teams have already turned things around while you've been at the bottom of the standings since 2019, 2020. How are you still in this spot? And we're sitting here in 2024 saying, well, there's not enough assets for this team to go out and make a move that really matters. That is such a problem. And I don't understand how it's just okay for this front office to not have that. Like, you've had a number one pick, two number five picks, another lottery pick in Jalen Duren. Like, you've had first round picks. You've had years to acquire other picks and sell off players and sell off projects that you've taken time to develop and trade off for future assets, or trade veterans that you've brought in for future assets. And you have nothing to show for it, because your first draft, you already traded one of your picks, and your two other first round picks have not done themselves any favors. Killian Hayes is worth absolutely nothing. Isaiah Stewart is worth something, but I don't know what that really is. Obviously, teams want him. Obviously, teams value what he can do, but the Pistons have played him in such a terrible role that I don't know what his value truly is, and I can't imagine it's as high as it once was. And now you have a similar story with Jaden Ivey, who had such a great rookie season, and now he's sitting here in year two, and his value has likely fallen off a cliff because of just how much things have fallen off track for him here. Their first-round pick is tied up in protections until 2028, thanks to the Isaiah Stewart trade. Like, you've had 4 years, and you have nothing to show for it. No moves to make. No pathway to getting this team better for next year. There's just no pathway outside of spending all of your cap space next summer on a bad free agency class. And remember, this is Detroit. You are not a destination city. You are not a destination landing spot. How are we sitting here 4 years into Troy Weaver's reign as this franchise's general manager and saying, as a three-win team, there are no true assets outside of Cade Cunningham and Jalen Duren that are going to be easy to work with to improve this team? That is such a problem.
Yeah, it's the entire issue with this front office. Yep. They are all chronically afflicted with smartest guy in the room syndrome. Nah, we're good. We don't need to bring in competition for Isaiah Livers on the wing. Nah, we're good. We don't need to make Isaiah Stewart prove it. Like, this is the issue with this entire organization. Shoot, just look at the front court. Like, Marvin Bagley, James Wiseman, Jalen Duren. Where is the veteran to teach these guys how to play basketball? Last night, James Wiseman against the Spurs could not grab a rebound. I said it on Twitter. I've never seen a player who needs to just get bullied by some 6'10 Yugoslavian worse in my entire life than James Wiseman. But Troy Weaver thinks that just because he can scout talent, that he knows how to put together an NBA roster. And that's just not how it works. You need competitors in your locker room. You need guys who are going to show your young players how to improve their skills. It's not just about talent. It's not just about, hey, I liked this guy coming out of college, therefore he's going to be good. That's not how it works. You need to be able to push your roster. You need to be able to have veterans in your locker room who will show your players how to play the right way. You need that sort of leadership, and they don't have it. Because again, Troy Weaver thinks he's the smartest guy in the room every single time. He doesn't understand what he doesn't understand. And that is, in my opinion, why this rebuild has completely fallen off a cliff. He thinks he can just NBA 2K it, and that's not how it works. And unfortunately, you have an owner who seems to think the same way, and where, you know, he pushes Stan Van Gundy to trade for Blake Griffin, and where he goes out and he throws $78.5 million at Monty Williams, even though he doesn't want to coach. And because the other guy is Troy Weaver, who wants to give you Kevin Ollie as your head coach, there's no checks and balances in this organization. This is the issue we have been harping on forever. There's no accountability. Why did Isaiah Stewart get extended? Why? Where was the prove it in here? Where was the competition for those power forward minutes? There was none. There was absolutely none. It was Troy Weaver saying, I know better than you guys. I've seen Isaiah Stewart shoot well in practice. Therefore, he's an NBA starting power forward, even though he can't pass and he can't dribble. And now he can't even really play defense because he's exhausted. He's completely lost out there. He's jogging down the court half of his possessions. The thing is just completely messed up, Aaron. And that's exactly why. No competition, no accountability, too many people who think they know what they're doing, and they're all in the same room together.
That is the crux of the problem. And before we get to our last topic, just to round off that conversation real nicely, just a quick one-word answer. Do you want Troy Weaver making the next big move for this franchise to attempt to get out of this mess?
I wouldn't trust Troy Weaver to put together a sandwich for me, let alone an NBA roster. Absolutely not.
In a more professional way, I guess, to Jasper, absolutely not. No, not with the track record he has here in Detroit, unfortunately. There's no way I want him making that decision right now, considering how this franchise has operated under his watch.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, we're talking about big moves. Like, we talked about Zach LaVine a month and a half ago. We talked about Siakam today, and we talked about Murray. I don't want Troy Weaver getting into a bidding war against Masai Ujiri for Siakam. I don't want to be going up against the Lakers or the Warriors or any other team for DeJounte Murray, because I'm afraid of what's going to be coming out of that. I just don't trust in the decision-making process, if there even is one. Sometimes it doesn't feel like there is one at all. I would rather you make moves along the margins, keep whatever powder is left dry, and hopefully have a new front office mentality for next year, or at least in the summer, when you're getting ready to add more meaningful players to this young team that now really is going to have pressure to play well, because – you know, Cade is going to be looking at that rookie extension soon, and you really don't want him to be the one that rejects it and opts for free agency. The first one to just say no to that rookie max. Yeah. So let's go on to our, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Aaron, real fast.
Just in agreement with you here. I think that's what the Pistons should be doing. They should be like making around the margin type moves, trying to bring in guys that can help this team just look a little bit more playable, look a little bit more functional this year, but that are also going to be under contract moving forward. Like, I have a piece written, it should be coming out soon, about some of those names. But there are guys out there, specifically at the forward spot, although they definitely do need a center that can defend a little bit as well. But there are some guys out there that are under contract that should be gettable, that shouldn't cost an arm and a leg to get. And then I think would really just help Detroit because, hey, they're older, they're veterans, they played in the league, they have experience. We know what they can do well, what type of role they'll be able to play. And it just it makes sense because you're getting more NBA players on the court and less non-NBA players, less Killian Hayes, less James Wiseman, less Isaiah Livers. You're getting those type of guys off the court and putting on NBA players that have played in defined roles, have experience, and know how to play to their strengths.
Yeah, we'll move on, but it's this simple for me. And it's exactly like you said, Mike. It's the marginal moves. Those are the ones. And like you just said, Aaron, what they need are those smaller moves. But Troy Weaver has shown absolutely no ability to make those moves or the desire to make those moves. And it's as simple as 8 first-round picks since he took over this franchise. And yet you still have the least talented roster in the entire NBA. It needs to be the small stuff, not all these big flashy moves. And he doesn't understand that. And he clearly has no ability to do anything other than select guys in the first round. And that's why it's not working, because there's nothing other than that.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Let's move on to our last topic for this podcast, and it's going to be a game of buy or sell. Okay, so I'm going to give you just a phrase, and I want you to let me know if you are buying that or if you are selling that. Pretty straightforward. We got five questions. Aaron, I'll start with you and we'll just alternate. Buy or sell? Kevin Knox is currently the second most playable wing on this roster.
It's an absolute buy. He's proven it in his minutes this year. It was a laughable move when the Pistons brought him back after he was on the team last year, but it's a testament to just how bad this team is. But Kevin Knox is legitimately the second best wing right now on this team behind Bojan Bogdanović. And I know fellow Palace of Pistons staffer Donovan Collins would feel and say the exact same thing. He's a big Kevin Knox guy, and Knox has played good basketball for Detroit as of late.
Absolutely. Kevin Knox is without a doubt the second most playable wing on the roster. Isaiah Livers has been a total disaster. Whether he's starting or coming off the bench, he looks absolutely sapped from all the injuries he's accrued over his 3 years as an NBA player. Knox has shot well. He's done the little things right. And it's a perfect example of all the things that Troy Weaver misses in NBA players. It's not about talent necessarily. It's about how do you fit into a roster. Kevin Knox has done the best job outside of Bojan Bogdanović of filling those holes and doing the little things that NBA teams need to win. So yes, I am buying.
And just before the YouTube comments go off on us, this is currently, this does not mean for the future. This is not a knock on Asar Thompson. He's just getting inconsistent minutes and he's not a shooter right now, which is impacting his ability to be on the court with a bunch of other non-shooters. But right now, Kevin Knox spaces the floor a little bit better, and I would have to buy this as well. He's currently the second most playable wing on the roster, which is really a testament of to just what the hell is happening with this Pistons team. Okay, number two, Jasper, it's back over to you. Buy or sell? James Wiseman is the primary backup center at the end of the season.
I am going to buy, and that is not me praising James Wiseman by any means. I just think Marvin Bagley's not getting playing time right now, but he has definitely outplayed Wiseman this year. So I have to think if there's going to be a move that Bagley will be part of it, because Wiseman is completely unpalatable to any team that's planning on acquiring a backup center during this trade deadline. So yeah, I think James Wiseman will be the primary backup center only out of necessity. And that's just because he'll be the only backup center available on this roster. Shoot, he might be the starter with the way that Jalen Duren keeps racking up ankle injuries. So yes, I'm going to
sell this just for my own sanity's sake. The way I see it, if James Wiseman is still the backup center after what we've seen from the, what, 2-3 weeks that he's been in the rotation, maybe it's been a month by now. It's an abject disaster. He is still proven he does not belong on the court. And if he is still the backup center, that is a major, major issue. Whether it's Isaiah Stewart in a new look role, or the Pistons make a move at the deadline to bring another center in, or they're playing James Wiseman right now to try to up his value, to show a team he's worth a flyer. And then they bring Marvin Bagley back in the rotation. I don't know what the solution is or what the answer to that is. I just have to sell, because there's no way that they're actually watching James Wiseman and saying that this is working right now.
Yeah, I would probably buy this, because I think that Bagley is likely to be traded. He's might have a suitor or two. I mean, they're obviously trying to shop around any of their guys to get something. And I think out of all of the centers on the roster, not Nate Chandler, and all two of them, Bagley seems like he could probably go for a pick, maybe. I mean, he's definitely looked okay when he's been on the floor. He's been an inexplicable DMP coach decision for some of these games. I just don't understand why, but it's neither here nor there. So I am going to buy this one as well. All right, Aaron, number three, buy or sell? The Pistons make more than two trades before the deadline.
selling on that. They could make two. They could make one. They could make two. I don't see a world where they're making more than that. Just too much shakeup for this team at the deadline. You know, there's less than a month to the deadline now. So there's not a whole lot of time to make those moves. And even if they make one or two, I just don't know what this team is really selling right now or has to offer teams that's enough to make that many moves. And yeah, I just don't see it happening. I think they'll definitely make one. There's definitely a shot they make two. I can't see more than that.
Yeah, I'm selling as well. I think it's going to be exactly two. And my guess is it's going to be Bogdanovich in one trade, Bagley in another. I'm going to say exactly two. So I will be selling. The Pistons, like you said, Aaron, just don't have enough to make more trades because they're going to have to package guys together. It's just not feasible otherwise. It's not like they have all these players that they can move one for one or one for two, whatever it may be. They don't have the assets straight up. So I think Bagley will be moved. I think Bogdanovich will be moved. But other than that, I just don't see a trade that can work out for both sides that Detroit would be okay with.
I'm going to sell this as well, but more on that I hope that they don't make more than two trades, because to me, if they are, that means that Troy Weaver is starting to pull the strings of some maniacal plan to totally revamp the roster. And I really hope that is not what's happening. But my gut says they'll make two trades. But if they do make any more, let's just say we're going to have a lot of content for the podcast. if they are wheeling and dealing with, you know, three plus moves before the deadline. Okay, topic number four. Joe Harris deserves more than 10 minutes per game. He came in, I forget if it was the Spurs or Kings. I think it was the Kings. He came in and lit it up in his brief period of time. He hit three threes. Guys, Joe Harris, does he deserve more than, or he deserves more than 10 minutes per game, buy or sell?
Why? I'm selling this. Oh, sorry. You want to go first, Aaron? Yeah.
Go ahead. I didn't realize. I guessed on whose turn it was to go first, so go for it.
That's all right. I'm always keeping track of when it's my next turn to talk. I'm selling this because of what you said, Mike, deserves. I don't think that Joe Harris has done anything to show me that he deserves more than 10 minutes a game. He hasn't been good defensively. He has been, outside of that one game, kind of unwilling to shoot the basketball at a rate that he would deserve to be on the floor for. Like we said in our first buy or sell, I think Kevin Knox has shown that he is probably the second most playable wing on the roster. I think Bogdanovich, as long as he is here, deserves that playing time as well. And I also think Asar Thompson, again, if we're talking about like deserves to be given a shot, I think he deserves it over Joe Harris personally at this point. If Harris gets, you know, a couple more opportunities to show that he's, you know, going to actually give you something, fine. And maybe he will prove me wrong on this. But as of right now, no, I don't think Joe Harris has shown me anything to prove that he deserves playing time over Knox, over Bogdanovich, or even Asar Thompson. Over Livers, sure. But what? That's not really saying anything. So I'll sell.
Yeah, I'm on the flip side of this. I'll buy it. Monty Williams said after the Sacramento game that he wants to get Joe Harris out there more and that he's really been working on his conditioning to get to the point where he can play more. So I'm going to buy it. I think he did give the Pistons some legitimately okay minutes against Sacramento, mainly because he knocked down the threes that he took. And that's really the only pathway to him having success when he's on the court at this point. But for the way that this team is playing and who's on the court for them right now, especially with Cade out and being down a guy that takes the 20 shots a game and plays the 38 minutes a night, like, I don't necessarily believe Asar really deserves more minutes right now, just with the way Asar is playing. And, you know, I don't think Killian, like, there are guys that you could take minutes from guys and find a few extra minutes for Joe Harris just because of how bad this team has been playing. Yeah, why the hell not? I mean, if James Wiseman's getting this type of opportunity, you might as well throw Joe Harris out there and see if he can knock down a couple threes in 10 minutes. Am I saying play him 15, 18, 20 minutes tonight? No, but can he get 10 minutes and see what happens? Yeah, why not?
I'll say this too. Like, if Joe Harris is playing more than 10 minutes a night, then Asar Thompson needs to be in the G League. There's just no ifs, ands, and buts about it.
Yeah, he needs to get run, both him and Sasser. Sasser's getting a little more run with Cade out, but you can't just have your two rookies withering away on the bench while Joe Harris and James Wiseman and Killian Hayes are soaking up all of that time. I'm gonna buy this as well with Joe Harris for the same reason that Aaron said. If James Wiseman can get on the court and goof around for, you know, 15 to 18 minutes a game, Joe Harris can go out there and just shoot. He's not going to do anything defensively. But if he can knock down a couple threes, you know, make his value look a little bit palatable. I mean, maybe you're able to offload him for something, anything, or worst case, he's a vet that can go out there and soak up some time and maybe hit some threes and cause a spark or something to happen, because the shooting is just abysmal. Not saying he's going to solve it, but the Pistons are like dead last in made threes per game and 29th in 3-point percentage. It just, not that he's going to solve it, like I said, but why not? I mean, you could put him out there, see what happens. At this point, I mean, I don't know what the worst thing possible that can happen, but it, I mean, you already had a 28 game losing streak, so you may as well see what he can give you. Okay, last topic, or rather last buy or sell. And I forget whose turn it is, which is incredible because we've only done five of these.
Fine this time.
It's Aaron's turn. Okay, Aaron, buy or sell, Isaiah Livers and Killian Hayes are both on the roster next season.
I have to say I'm selling this for the same reason I sold on James Wiseman being the primary backup at the deadline. For my own sanity's sake, there's no way that both of these guys can still be on the roster next year. I wouldn't be shocked if one of them is, but if Killian Hayes is still on this team, there is a major, major issue. And look, we've talked about it multiple times. I've tweeted about it. Like, you just have too many guys that have not shown that they're NBA players, not only on the roster, but in the rotation for this team. Both these guys are starting right now, and I feel that they have not proven enough in their careers to show that they're worth an NBA roster spot at this point, especially with the amount of turnaround in the league, especially with how many guys come in and get a very small chance or don't get a chance to play and are already out of the league. Like, these guys have gotten 3 and 4 years now respectively, and they don't have anything to show for it. If they're still on this team next season, that means that you did absolutely very little again in the offseason. Troy Weaver's probably still the general manager, and this team is set for another very, very bad season.
I'm also selling on this. I'm going to sell on Killian Hayes being on the Pistons. I'm also going to sell on Isaiah Livers being in the NBA next year. I've seen nothing from him this season that has shown me that he is better suited to be in the league than, shoot, Stanley Amude. And that guy is in the G League right now. So I will absolutely sell. Maybe he catches on like a two-way at some point. Like, he plays a few games, but I cannot see any NBA roster, any NBA GM looking at him and saying, hey, I need this guy who can't shoot and doesn't play defense at a high level, at even a replacement level. I need him on my roster. Like, there's more. I can see it with him. I can't. He's hurt all the time, too. Like, it's every single year he's hurt. He has fallen off a cliff since his rookie year when he was actually showing us some flashes. So I think Isaiah Livers is out of the league. I think that Killian Hayes sticks in the league, but it's certainly not going to be on the Pistons. And like you said, Aaron, the fact that I'm selling on Isaiah Livers being in the NBA at all and he's starting for this team, my God, does that not just tell you everything you need to know about this roster?
Yeah, I am going to sell this hard as well. Livers and Hayes just, I mean, Killian Hayes has had his time to make an impact. It hasn't worked out, other than that brief flash in the pan last year where it looked like he put everything together and we were ecstatic about it. Other than that, he has not been the defensive player that I think we all hoped for. He hasn't been the sort of table setter that I think we hoped for either. Certainly not the offensive player. And it's time for just, you know, a clean break for both sides. It just hasn't worked out.
And Isaiah Livers, the idea of Isaiah Livers has always been better than the on-court product as a, you know, a wing that could shoot. Just hasn't come to fruition for him. And it's unfortunate because it's health related and that's less in his control, and you hate to see that. So I would say both of those guys can't be on the roster. And I'll be honest, if either one of them are, I would be shocked. I would be shocked. Although if Troy Weaver is still the GM, I guess there is, you know, like a 3% chance that he keeps with one of them since they were his picks. But it's a sell for me, for sure.
I'd be furious, honestly, if either guy is on the roster. Furious for Killian, because I think if he's ever going to stick in this league, like, it needs to be on a team that's set up for him. And furious with Livers because, like I said, he just has not shown at any point this year that he is an NBA quality player. He's a 3-and-D wing who can't shoot and doesn't play defense. There's nothing for me there. And there's too many guys overseas and in the G League who are talented enough to where they deserve a shot over him. Like, he's had his time to show it. He hasn't. It's time to move on.
Well, that's all the buy or sell questions that I had for you guys. I think this was a nice, well-rounded podcast. Do you have any closing thoughts here before we wrap up this edition of the Palace of Pistons podcast?
No, I guess what I'll do is I'll tease. A lot of work's been going on behind the scenes here at Palace of Pistons for the last week or so, 2 weeks, and very, very excited for the future. We have some really, really cool things happening behind the scenes. So very, very appreciative to everyone that listens and supports, and I hope that that continues as we move into, I guess, the next phase of the life of Palace of Pistons. So again, thank you, and I hope you guys continue to stick around and support. You guys are what makes this possible. So very much appreciative to everyone who tunes in and reads our work and follows us on social media and interacts with us daily, weekly, whatever. It's very, very much appreciated, and excited to show you guys what we have coming down the line.
Yep, it's nice to have something exciting to look forward to from Palace of Pistons, because there's very little exciting happening on the court, especially with Cade Cunningham out. So I'm really looking forward to that stuff. Looking forward to this game, the Wizards, in two games, far less so. But we will see what happens. And just excited to be on this ride with you guys. So that'll do it for me for this week. I'm just excited to see what we have to talk about next week.
Yes, and we hope that you'll all be joining us next week, as, you know, maybe we will unveil what has been working on behind the scenes. And like Aaron said, it's really cool. And next phase, you know, I think it's the next evolution for what Palace of Pistons, you know, has to be, and, you know, what it's able to provide all of you who have been trudging along with, you know, arguably one of the worst seasons in NBA history. It really is a testament to the desire to watch a winner and the, you know, the hunger for a better product. And hopefully you will stick with us, you know, as we do the same, hunger for something more out of ourselves. And we have a really, really great plan laid out that I'm really, really excited to share with all of you. I was messaging Aaron and Jasper saying, can we talk about it? And the answer was no, not yet. But maybe by this time next week, and we hope that you'll be joining us next week for that edition of the podcast. But for this edition, that's going to do it. We thank you all for joining us. I'd like to thank our sponsor for this week's episode, that is BetOnline. Again, you can use our promo code BELIEV, BLEAV, to get your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit when you use BetOnline. For my co-hosts, Jasper Apollonia and Aaron Johnson, I'm Mike Angolano. Thank you so much for joining us on this edition of the Palace Pistons podcast, part of the BELIEV Network, and we will see you all next time.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.